Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I, too, express my gratitude to the organizing committee for inviting me to address this august audience. Just to clarify, my day job is I'm a university professor at Purdue University in the area of plant genetics and work in the field of agriculture. I've got a great honor and privilege to serve the government of the United States as a science diplomat. You may remember a couple of years ago, 2009, President Obama, in addressing in his Cairo speech, following that, there was a designation of science envoys, and the first year, three science envoys were designated, and those were sent to Muslim nations. The program was appreciated so much, the second year, it was expanded to cover the entire globe, and I was a part of that cohort of three that were designated the second year in representing the continent of Africa. And so in my presentation, I'll talk about agriculture, about feeding the world, and I, of course, I would be trying to advocate for science and advocate the need for science in the African continent. The headline is very clear. Last month, somewhere in this planet, the 7 billionth child was born. And the prediction is by 2050, the world population is likely going to grow and perhaps increase and stabilize somewhere around 9.4, 9.5 billion people. This roughly translates into a near 40% in global population in the next four decades. Adding to the demand for food supply in this planet. There is also another component. As part of that growth, there would be a segment of the world that would be economically improving their livelihoods, and those are likely to change their diets from starch and carbohydrate-based diet to a more protein diet. And so the grain that we produce is going to be recycling through livestock and poultry and adding to that pressure of demand. So the general estimate is anywhere from 70 to 100% food production increase, therefore doubling in the next 40 years the amount of food supply. And today, with the current situation, with the current state of knowledge, with the resources that we have, nearly 1 billion poor people face hunger daily. And another, you know, about 2.6 billion people live on $2 a day. When crises like the 2007-2008 food price crisis occur, the number of poor continually, gradually increase. The unfortunate part of the story there, when the poor get in there, their likelihood of getting out of there is not very good under the current set of circumstances. So in general, it is not hard to believe that humanity will face a formidable challenge of feeding itself in the next 40 years. There are a number of pressures that are coming at us. Population is only one set of those challenges. The other challenge is, when you look at the doubling of food production, just to put it in the context that maybe some may not understand, that it is very easy to say that doubling food production in the next four decades really translates to producing as much food in the next four decades as we had since the beginning of civilization. We did that in the past, meeting the demand for human population growth with advances in science, with advances in technology, and we're likely to be meeting these challenges in the future. But I think we need to recognize that the circumstances under which we'll be doing is going to be changing. And that is to say that we have more and more been appreciating the fragility of our ecological systems. In the past, we've been able to exploit the advances in plant genetics and animal genetics and crop and animal management and using generous levels of fertilizers and pesticides to boost our production. With this sensitivity that we have developed now, and the story that we heard very, very clearly this morning, agriculture has contributed to that as well, and therefore that we may have to be doing all of that with a limited set of inputs and opportunities, and therefore the science needs to be sharpened even more to be able to achieve this. Land constraints are huge. That estimates are maybe about 12 to 15% more arable land available for us to expand into. And in the past, much of the increase in production in developing countries have been by expanding, by bringing in more land into cultivation. And out of that 12, 15% more land, nearly 50 to 60% of that land is found in Africa, where the science is not. And our opportunities to increase that is going to be constrained as well. Pre and post-harvest food losses all over the world, all the way from the developed to developing countries, even to countries like India that have dramatically changed their food production and changing themselves from a so-called basket case in the 1960s to really a bread basket. Harvest losses due to storage amount to approximately 20% out of the grain storage systems of needy places like India. All over the world, particularly perishable products of vegetables and fruits, where storage systems are not there, where transportation systems are not there in much of the developing countries. The losses of food that is already being produced at harvest, post-harvest, in storage is very significant. In addition to the nutritional issues, where not only the basic nutritional things that have been, items that have been emphasized in the past, and proteins and vitamins, and now with the need, with the greater emphasis in micronutrients and child nutrition, the need out there is tremendous, where estimates are nearly 25,000 children are dying daily. And so I have dubbed these what I thought is existing challenges that are going to be growing challenges. And then much of what have been discussed this morning very well, the issues of increasing surface temperature on a regular basis, and the climate change, and then the cascading effect that comes from climate onto everything that we do in food production and food nutrition. More than any other thing, the one thing that has unanimity even around the world is a crisis around water. Unfortunately, 70% of fresh water use is in agriculture, and much of the water pressure is really in the most productive and where science had got an opportunity in the Western world, in North America, in nearly where everywhere modern agriculture has succeeded, the constraint in water is increasing. For, you know, in addition to that, there are issues around water quality as well. The energy demand and cost, estimates are nearly our energy demand at current rate is growing about 2% per year. And so every 35, 37 years, the energy demand increases. And this is assuming the current state of use and with the expansion of technology and economies booming in some highly populous nations, and the demand in energy is going to be constraining agriculture, particularly the fate of agriculture in areas where agriculture is going to be badly needed, and particularly I focus here on South Asia and Africa. And the complexities of global trade, and you know, has been evidenced in the repeating food prices crisis, our trade and distribution system for food has shown significant signs of instability already. And so we're operating under this sets of emerging and growing challenges in being able to feed humanity. And then context is that, and I take these pictures from my own native country, from Ethiopia, and nothing about what you see in this picture suggests about science. This is an old nation practicing agriculture today in exactly the way we practiced for the last 3,000 years. Science has not been given a chance in much of Africa and developing countries, and the opportunities to make a difference is tremendous. And that was the way food is produced and the way food is processed and distributed. And these people, they're trying the hardest to make, to edge their living there. And again, in their daily lives, there isn't any sign of signs that have significantly affected much of these people in developing countries. Again, I take these pictures from my own home, native country. But solutions for much of this, as many of you have indicated, lies in science, technology, and innovation. We have shown in the past, through advances that have been made, first in North America and expanded to Europe, and then through the Green Revolution in Asia, science, when given a chance, had really met the demands of food production and the needs of humanity. We can still do to expand productivity and profitability. We can improve crop and animal varieties through modern genetic means. We can enhance adaptation to droughts, pests, and diseases. We can create environmentally sustainable fertilizers and pesticides. Pre- and post-harvest losses could be reduced. Farming methods could be improved. And we can ensure that these technologies also reach those that need it most. And what we haven't done, and I think what we've been needing, is to give science a chance. Here is my own precipitation of all of the factors that affect science-based development around the world to the three nuggets. And these are science, technology, and innovation. Education really is a primary driver for this. But you can't provide education, we can't give science a chance without building the human and institutional capacity in each one of these nations, providing opportunities for public institutions and private institutions so that science, technology, and innovation could be generated. But those two would not be made possible without sound governance, sound policy, and particularly that committed executive leadership, particularly in developing countries where the leaders tend to wield significant power. So that resolve and commitment is really the key, and we have not done a good job, particularly those of us in science and science community, in being able to communicate and change minds at the leadership of key governments around the world to give science a chance so we can influence and impart and transform livelihoods in developing countries. Many of you have said that and global problems, global solutions, and that is to suggest that these problems that are in the far fringes of the world that affect humanity in developing countries have ramifications in the way we live all over the world. And different degrees of contributions that can be made from traditional science powerhouses to emerging powerhouses and to begin to bring science into developing nations because we need massive investments in education, in human institutional capacity investments, and the developing countries can learn from the examples of China, India, and Brazil. Each one of these countries followed totally different ways in which they enhance their science, but they all based it by capitalizing on human and institutional capacity. And that is truly the foundation upon which these changes can be made. The urgency of the problem for poor and rich nations, for humanity at large, we need to, adjustments are badly needed. Problems, as many of you have indicated, are not necessarily in each one of those challenges that I mentioned, but the interfaces in between them. And as a result, these problems are getting more and more complicated, and therefore we need the growing fields of science, we need to build partnership, we need to develop more integrated approaches, new models, new tools, and new skill sets need to be developed. And the need to investment in science, now and before the problems get out of hand. Yes, the problems today are getting more complicated, but so are the arsenals of science available to solve these problems. We will need to better advocate for science, to awaken our political leaders and incite their resolve and commitment to invest in science and technology so generations of scientists could commit to meeting these challenges head on. The struggle for feeding humanity is associated with economic disadvantage, poverty. Poverty is the root of the cause of hunger. And I say it's a sad commentary. With all of the abundance of resources in the world and all of the significant advances in science and technology around us, that we have not been able to solve to give humanity that fundamental right to enough food. I think the Director General of UNESCO said this morning, the world is calling out for science, and I will say no other segment or part of the world more than Africa really truly is crying out for science. Thank you very much.